It's time to get behind the lyrics, the music, and the artist. You're listening to the Music's Journey podcast, brought to you by NowAndThenMagazine.com, your music and entertainment online magazine. I'm John Marshall. With her special guest, here's the pretty Kim Seer.
Aww. Multi-platinum entertainer with Open Road Recordings, Tim Hicks is here. He's going to tell us about the story behind The Good, The Bad, and The Pretty with his new single released to country radio. This song is the first release off his upcoming EP out later this year. Welcome, Tim.
Thanks, Tim. Appreciate it.
Woo-hoo. We are so happy to have you here.
That's the most amount of applause I've heard in about a year.
It is tough, isn't it?
Yeah, it's tough. It was a big adjustment coming back literally from the front end of my world tour to being thrust into being a stay-at-home dad.
Thank God you've got a recording studio and you got dad time in the recording room, right?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, so we're able to stay a little bit creative. Although I will admit it took a long time to kind of come out of the funk in order to feel good enough to be creative. But I'd say by midsummer, you know, I was starting to feel like myself again, and we started writing pretty hard in the fall, and it's just been like gangbusters ever since. Songs falling out all over the place.
Oh, that's awesome to hear. That's one thing we always love to hear.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I'm telling you, we were just playing your song just before we're getting ready to go on air here, and It's so funny. We can't get that out of our head. We were playing it last night. And it's just like we're running around the house going, the good, the bad, and the pretty. Like, yeah, we just can't stop doing it.
I appreciate that. Thank you. I'm excited about this one. I think it's like, you know, for me, it's, well, I mean, I'll just tell you the story. So this is a song that came out of the CCMA songwriting camp, which was really cool. So 2 Januaries ago, we all got together. There was a group of producers, a group of artists, and a group of songwriters. And the idea was that we all went up and locked ourselves away at this resort in Muskoka. And over the course of a week, we all worked with each other. And each day we'd be paired, like as an artist, I was paired with a producer and a songwriter each day. And you had one day to write and record a song. And you had to present that song, play the recording for everyone else that night.
Oh, wow.
So it was like a mad dash to get, you know, all the vocals cut, and the producers would be editing and mixing and like literally, you know, guys and girls like running from their cabins with thumb drives, you know, at 8:55 to play at 9 p.m. for everybody, you know.
Good
every
Lord.
Night. Yeah, it was a whole lot of fun. And that particular day I was paired up with Derek Rattan and Derek Hoffman. And I had the title in my back pocket for a little while. And it was The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly, like the old Clint Eastwood film. Mm-hmm. I thought that would make a really great country song. And the idea would be, you know, I would describe sort of all the little rooms that I played, because they were all very similar when I, you know, in retrospect, and especially in small town Ontario, typically there would be only one venue that had live music. And so you got a real mishmash of people, like from, you know, all different walks of life. And I met some really great people in those rooms, and some of which are still very good friends of mine to this day. And I wanted to pay tribute to those types of venues and to those types of people that would frequent those venues, because those are my people, you know. And
I was so one I thought, of those, you know, the good, people. The
bad, yeah, you know. And so I thought The Good, Bad, and The Ugly would be good, and I can see Rattan, the wheels are turning. He's like, oh, I don't know, Tim, I don't know. The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, because it's kind of a weird word to sing, like ugly. And I'm like, yeah,
that's true.
That's the phrase, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. I said, well, what do you want to call it, Derek? The Good, the Bad, and the Pretty? And he goes, oh, yes. I've never heard anyone say that. I said, you've never heard anyone say that, because it's not a thing. He goes, it will be. Let's write it.
And, awesome.
Yeah, and that's how it kind of, you know, that little twist as a joke in the room becomes, you know, the crux of the song. And yeah, it was just one of these ones that it kind of made sense. You know, like I love that rock country kind of vibe, you know, dipping into classic country, dipping into classic rock. And I think, you know, Derek Hoffman played a lot of guitars on it that day, and he really captured that vibe. And, you know, it's like, it's the idea of, you know, because I'm really missing our local watering hole. We've got one place in particular in St. Catharines that we frequent, you know, typically once a week, really, for beer and chicken wings. And I just love those rooms because I grew up in them. So, you know, it's a song designed to sort of bring you to a different place as we're all stuck in our homes, right? As the smoke clears from COVID.
And you know what? It's so nice, you know, surreal for me because I saw you playing when you first started. And, you know, it was a long time coming before you had that first hit. And I was there when it happened too. So, you know, it pays tribute to your fans and the people that stuck behind you, but also the venue, you know, the venues that you've been in. So it's really cool.
Yeah, 18 years.
Long time.
18 years.
But we all knew.
You get your 10,000 hours in, right?
That's right. We all knew that you had something special. And I remember telling you that when your song hit and, you know, you were coming out of the trailer. And it was just such a surreal moment to see someone work so hard and believing in yourself. You know, believing in the music, right?
Yeah, and I appreciate that. It was one of those things where, you know, I mean, it's not that I didn't believe in myself, but there came a point where I just stopped caring. Mm-hmm. I stopped caring what people would think, or, you know, because it was, you got to imagine, like, I grew up in Niagara Falls. There was no country station, and I didn't even know really I was a country singer until I was in my late 20s when, you know, I was doing gigs and people kept asking me. Because you'd have to play everything. Like when I played, you know, bars in Niagara Falls and St. Catharines and you know, all the way to Ottawa and Windsor and back, like you had to play everything from, you know, Journey to Lynyrd Skynyrd to whatever the top 40 hit was to mm-hmm. Friends in Low Places, Blue Rodeo, Eagles. Like we kind of did it all. And really what I discovered when people started asking me to cover guys like Eric Church and Keith Urban and Jason Aldean, you know, they'd say, you got a really good voice for that. And once I sort of dug into the music, I found like, oh, wow, this is where I belong. Like this is where I fit in, because I had a real hard time for the first, you know, 15 years of my career figuring out where it is that I fit in as an artist. I was a working musician, but I've come to realize that being an artist and being a working musician are two mm-hmm. different animals, you know? So it took a long time to sort of figure out who I was artistically. But once I figured it out, it was like, the whole thing accelerated out of the gate, and it's, you know, we've been riding this crazy rocket ride ever since, you know.
Well, you brought the rock into country, and mm-hmm. you know, at the right time, because it was just a perfect fit. And that's why, you know, all of us classic rock people like me, I loved country music, you know, certain songs, but I was never a real big country fan.
Yeah.
And, you know, because I was always classic rock. That's everybody that I did. You know, when I did all the interviews, it was always those big bands. And, mm-hmm. you know, then all of a sudden it started to change. And I remember doing Rhinestone. I don't know if you remember that. Rhinestone 2008.
Yep.
And everybody that wasn't on radio, Lady A, there was so many of them that were there that day and mm-hmm. that I interviewed backstage, and they hadn't hit yet. And it was just, you know, a floodgate that year.
Yes.
And it was just everybody in Canada started hitting the country charts. And you were one of them that started to really, you know, step out a little bit into your own. And that's when I started hearing you play a lot more. Right.
Yeah.
And you hadn't got the song yet, but then you hit with Florida Georgia Line. And that was just such a cool moment.
Yeah, it really was. And that was like one of those things that, you know, who knew it was going to happen, but the genre changed and exploded so fast.
Mm-hmm.
And I happened to be standing there with a guitar. You know what I mean? And
thank God,
it was sort of like right sound, right moment, right time kind of thing. And everything changed, and it changed quickly. And so it was a bit of a learning curve. And I remember feeling like a deer in the headlights for the first year of my career at the national level. And then, you know, as you sort of settle into it, you find your voice in terms of, you know, like telling your team what it is you want to do and what you want to accomplish and what you want to say. And then, you know, we've sort of been off to the races ever since. And, you know, what I loved about country, especially at that time, was guitars and songs.
Mm-hmm.
And because it seemed like guitars and melodies and singing had kind of gone out the window in rock music and in modern rock music.
Mm-hmm.
And what I loved about bands like the Eagles and The Band and Lynyrd Skynyrd was their abilities, you know, to play guitar really great and to sing really great and harmonies and write really great, memorable songs. And that's what I love about country. And I, you know, I say this to people all the time, you know, if those bands like the Eagles and Lynyrd Skynyrd and The Band and the Allman Brothers, if those brothers were to come out today, likely they would find a home on country radio.
And it's funny, isn't that true?
Yeah. And that's kind of what I always said, you know, I didn't grow up on a ranch. I don't wear a cowboy hat, but I do 100% believe that I fit in, you know, in the country scene in Canada, especially, you know, like Blue Rodeo. Like, you used to see Blue Rodeo on Much Music. Mm-hmm. And then one day CMT came on the television and all of a sudden you saw Blue Rodeo on CMT. And I, you know, I'm such a huge fan of that kind of music. It only made sense that I start to look over the fence a little bit, right?
Exactly.
And, you know, next thing you know, we're headed to Nashville.
You see so many people that are in folk singers, and everybody's now a part of that country genre.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure why that is, but it, you know, like I said, I think it, you know, it comes down to the tendencies like harmony and like songwriting, and it's just good. It's just good fun, you know? And I remember telling the band, cause I've had the same band for years and years and years and years. It's been the same core. In fact, Andrew, my guitar player, left for a time and now is back. So it's, we're back to the four core members, and we've got, you know, we've obviously grown, and we've got Chris now, and we've got Jeff Willingham. But the core of the band is the same. And I remember telling them, because we would do, like, we could do a night of rock, a night of country, a night of Irish East Coast kind of music. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, when I did my acoustic gigs, I was doing all those things. But what I really loved was, you know, singing the country songs. I just thought they were just so much fun. You know, the Kenny Chesneys and the Aldeans and the Churches and, you know, things like that, that people were constantly asking me for. And when I told the band, all right, enough's enough. We're going full on country, and they're like, oh no. You know, how are we going to get away with this at our house gig in downtown Toronto? And but we did somehow. It's so bizarre. We were the house band at Grace O'Malley's at an Irish bar nonetheless. And the first night I had said, okay, tonight we're doing all country all night. I'll never forget, this girl came to the front of the stage and she had her nose all wrinkled up, and she says, is all you're gonna play is country? And I said, yep. And we were into the next one, right? And by like two gigs later, someone called out, you know, for Cheap Trick or whatever. And we played it. And we finished the song and people were yelling, play more country. So it was as if like there was a shift in the world and in the crowd. And, you know, it was so bizarre. Here we are downtown Toronto at the corner of King and John. Essentially, you're right half a block behind it, Duncan
right.
and Pearl. But
yeah.
King and John, kids lined up around the block to see three guys or four guys, you know, in jeans and cowboy boots play Chicken Fried, play Save a Horse, Ride a Cowboy. It was so bizarre. And we knew we were on to something, you know, we knew. And then when I had Get By, the best was this part, is when we had Get By, because we were told at those gigs, you're not allowed to play your own stuff.
Yes,
we,
that's
we
true.
Pay you money, you play covers. So I'd look around. Any managers around? No? Okay. I'd say, all right, everybody, this next one's by, just checking, Jason Aldean. And go, I like to drink, she likes to smoke. And the dance floor never, like usually when you play an original, the dance floor clears because people don't know it. But for some reason, people stayed up and danced. And the band looked at me and, like, I'll never forget on that break, they were like, whoa, did you see that? Like, we were so blown away. People were interested, and we knew we had something. And it was that moment that, like, you know, we knew we had something real special, and we couldn't wait for the world to figure it out. You know, it was pretty those were fun days.
I think the world was figuring it out along with you, because, you know, we know here, you know, I've been in this for such a long time, same thing with John, mm-hmm. but it was funny, you know, to see all the people that, you know, you would talk to, you know, what do you like to listen to? It was always rock, right?
Yeah.
And then indie started, you know, sneaking in there. But then all of a sudden, these, once Canadians got on board with a few of the country artists that were coming out that were in the rock genre like yourself, all of a sudden, you know, you've seen all these people coming out of the closet, all these country fans coming out of the closet, and they've taken over. They are the most loyal fans.
They are. They are the most loyal fans. And, you know, I still hear to this day, there's two things that I hear. And one of them, it's like nails on a chalkboard to me. So they'll say, oh, I hate country music. And it's like, do you even have an understanding of what that means in this day and age? Like, it's really, you know, I mean, the genre has changed so drastically. And there's so many different kinds of country music. It's like you could find one that you like for sure. You know, it's a lot different. People, you know, that's the person that still thinks all country is like, you know, I lost my truck and my dog died, and, you know, I'm tearing my beer kind of, you know. But then there is that if you want to chase that, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You've got that. And the other thing that I hear all the time is people will say, I don't like country, but you're all right, Tim.
Oh, wow.
Well, guess what?
I'm here to stay.
If you like me, if you like what I do, you like country, because that's where, you know, my music gets played on country radio. So, you know, I sort of walk that, borrowing the phrase, but I kind of walk that line of like that rock country sort of genre. And sometimes I get my hand slapped, and that's mm-hmm. okay if you're pushing the limits too far.
The guitar licks, I bet.
Yeah, like for instance, you know, radio will say, oh, we can't play that one, it's too rock or whatever it is. And that, you know, that's fine. I'd rather be known as the guy that pushed the limits than mm-hmm. the guy that just kept putting out vanilla soft serve ice cream, you know what I mean? So to me, it's more important.
That's not you.
Yeah, exactly. To be a little bit more rocky road than vanilla, you know what I mean? And you know, there's nothing wrong with any of that, but you got to be true to who you are. And that's you know, what I've tried to do this entire time.
Have you noticed, you know, like for yourself through all of this journey, from the time that you were starting in those pubs and, you know, those small bars to now, are you putting out, like, I know Open Road Recordings is amazing to get behind the artists and be able to let them take the lead on, you know, the kind of sound, you know, what they're looking for as an artist. And it wasn't always that way, you know, back when you first started out. Are you completely true to what you want to play?
Yeah. I mean, I would say, yeah. I mean, sometimes your team will get behind a song that you don't necessarily love.
Mm-hmm.
But I can say in almost all instances, there's something about that song that I can be objective about and say, okay, I can see how that would work. You know, and sometimes, like, for instance, No Truck Song was that. I thought they were crazy when they picked it as a single.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've got a voice with my team, and if I kick and scream enough, they'll do what I ask. But it is very much a team mentality, and I rely on other people, you know, to sort of guide those types of things. This would be a good song for streaming. This would be a good song for, you know, for radio. This would be a good song for your fans. You know, and those three things don't often, they are sometimes mutually exclusive. So, you know, it can be difficult as an artist to know where you're going, but every mm-hmm. single song I put out, I'm proud of, you know, and I can't, like, for instance, a song like The Beat's All Right, you know, we released that to radio, and I knew that, hey, some people weren't going to get it, and some people were. And, you know, when it's kind of flopped out at radio, I wasn't surprised, but I'm glad that we put it out, because once again, it was one of those things where, you know, I was trying to really push limits and do mm-hmm. kind of a retro thing. And it's a really fun song to play live. So that in and of itself makes it worth putting out, you know. I mean, you run the risk of like, oh, Tim Hicks had a flop at radio. It's like, who cares? Moving on. Throw out another one.
Yes,
you know what I mean?
Like, exactly.
And the first time that happens, you think your world is ending. You know, oh my, I'm never going to get on radio again. This is awful. You know, when you first come out and you're new and you're fresh, mm-hmm. everything you do goes top 10. And then after a while, people kind of get used to you. Oh, here comes Tim Hicks singing about beer again. You know, that kind of thing. But that's okay, because, you know, to me, what's true to me is those 18 years that I played in bars.
Mm-hmm.
So singing about the party is 100% natural for me, because when you're in that environment all the time and it's your job to bring the party every night, it only mm-hmm. makes sense that you're going to write what you know, which is that very thing. And also playing in a cover band for all those years, you really get a good understanding when you're learning all that material, or as we say, when you shed that material as musicians,
mm-hmm.
you get a real good understanding of how songs and how hit songs are put together. So as long as you're paying attention to that, you can use that to your advantage when you're writing, you know, for instance, like the crowd stuff. You know, I learned in this tribute band, I played in a Beatles tribute band, and I traveled around the world singing Beatles songs and dressing up and doing that whole thing. And what I learned on that gig, the biggest thing I learned was, if you tell people to stand up and mm-hmm. clap their hands mm-hmm. and sing along, most of the time they'll do it.
Yep.
And so when I got back from that gig, I just started doing that at our gig in the bar. Come on, sing along. I want to hear you. Clap your hands. And what I saw was that people started, you know, they'd say, I had a really good time tonight. And they don't even understand what, why that is.
Yeah, they forget, but, because you know what, you're standing there and it's just such a cool opportunity to involve the fans, right?
Exactly. What it is the involvement. They were involved in the show. They were a part of it. And I still say that from the stage, especially if I get kind of like a quiet crowd. I'll say, listen, this is going to go how you want to go. Like if we give it and you give it back, we'll give you back more, that kind
awesome.
Of thing. So, and that's so that the same show, the band thinks it's hilarious, because the same show that we were doing for 15 people, at the Red Hot Chili Pepper in St. Catharines, mm-hmm. is the same show that we played at the Meridian Center in front of 5,000 people. But we got to play my own songs instead of covers, mm-hmm,
mm-hmm.
So that's the fun part about the whole thing is getting to see that transition and getting to apply all that knowledge and all that experience to our own show, and hopefully we can just keep the train rolling and people are still interested enough to come along for the ride.
Well, as you've seen, look at all everything that you have accomplished so far is so well deserved. But like
Thank you
said, you made sure you stayed true to yourself.
And
this song in particular, when you play this one live, that is just like a sure thing that everybody's going to have their hands up in the air. People are going to be clapping and singing along. It's a perfect song right now.
And that's it's our night to go all night, with all those stomps and claps and stuff. Like that's for the crowd. Like when we finally are able to get to playing live, I mean, that's the moment. And I'll say, there's always a spot in my songs for you guys. Here you go. Here, I'll teach it to you. This is how it goes, and The Good, the Bad, and the Pretty is a great example of a song that should be played in an arena,
And
so I can't wait to get back to that.
It's really cool, as you're saying that right now, because when you did this song, we're used to that guitar play.
Yeah, because we were trying to bring guitar solos back for a while.
Yeah, you brought it down, and you turned around, and you had that clap in there. And just,
exactly.
Very cool.
We were trying to pay tribute in that moment, so a little bit of a little bit of Jack and Diane in there, a little bit of Life in the Fast Lane in there, a little bit of Friends in Low Places in there.
Exactly.
It's a little bit of that. And then, of course, instead of the guitar solo to do the lick,
mm-hmm.
and then have the crowd sing, or, I'll lead the crowd when it comes time. And it's our night to go all night. We're all right. We're the good, the bad, and the pretty, that kind of thing, It's the idea of, we're all out. It doesn't matter whether you're a doctor, a lawyer, a softball player, a farmer, a young person, an old person, doesn't matter. If you're in that place, you're there to enjoy live music, and that's what we all have in common, and that is the love in that moment, and that's what we're all celebrating. So that's what the bridge means in The Good, the Bad, and the Pretty.
Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was really cool when I heard it. It's like,
you.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Nicely done. All right, let's play Tim Hicks' brand new single, The Good, the Bad, and the Pretty, right here on Music's Journey.
Coors Light sign buzzing on the wall, somebody's name on a bathroom stall. We're full on Friday nights, and we got all kinds of kinds. Beer drinking boys on a softball team, dolled up girls with fake IDs, one redneck looking to fight, and they're all here all night. Yeah, we're all the same, but we're different. We're all just live and let live in, just a little ways out of the city, where the good, the bad, and the pretty. We all need something to sip in, a jar we can throw a little tip in, tell the band, hey, play nitty gritty. For the good, the bad, and the pretty. We're the good, the bad, and the pretty. Biker vests and business suits, fresh hat tops and old farm boots. They're all hanging round, 'cause it's the only bar in town. Drop dead legs in a little black dress, pink lipstick on cigarettes. Only get two nights a week to blow off all the steam. Different. We're all just live and let live in, just a little ways out of the city, where the good, the bad, and the pretty. We all need something to sip in, a jar we can throw a little tip in, tell the band, hey, play nitty gritty, for the good, the bad, and the pretty. It's our night, to go all night. pretty. Yeah, we're all the same, but we're different. We're all just living, living, just a little ways out of the city. We're the good, the bad, and the pretty. We all need something to sip in. The jar, we can throw a little tip in. Tell the band, play Paradise City. We're the good, the bad, and the pretty. We're all the same, but we're different. Bad and pretty. I'll need something to sip in. The jar, we can throw a little tip in. Tell the band, play Paradise City. We're the good, the bad, and the pretty.
The good, the bad, and the pretty. Love that song. Tim Hicks on the Music's Journey podcast. I love the line in there, all kinds of kinds. I love that phrase. Now back to the Music's Journey podcast with our special guest, Tim Hicks, who misses hanging out on St. Paul Street in St. Catharines at the Chili Pepper, or Cat's Caboose, or even Bugsy's. Here is your host, Kim Sear.
I really appreciate the sentiment that goes into all of this and how you always thank everybody. The one thing I said to you, I don't know if you remember, you know, me talking to you about you being one of the most humble guys I'd ever met. And that was
That's before you hit it.
And, you know, you were always so easy to talk to. It's just like everybody was friends, you know, yeah. when you were sitting playing in the clubs that I saw you playing in.
Yeah.
And this song lends itself to that. Right. And yes. that's the story you're telling is, you know, thanking everybody that was in there and it didn't matter who they were. And, you know, it's just such a cool play on this song. So really happy for this one. Cannot wait to see it live.
Oh. Yeah, it's going to be a whole lot of fun. And you know, I can't even wait to rehearse it. I haven't seen my band in so long. I mean, we've done the video chat and text each other and whatnot, but you know, it's hard when there's no gigs on the books and you know, we'll just have to see what happens as the world starts to open up. You know, they're starting to whisper about tour plans and dates and how that's all going to go. And which was good, because a few weeks back, somebody asked me, has anybody, you know, mentioned anything? And I said, you know, the creepy thing is that no one has said a word.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, as I was watching, you know, I got friends of mine that, of course, have been out of work for a long time. And, you know, without realizing, you know, they were sort of complaining to me about, you know, not being able to go back to work with Ontario being in the gray, or Niagara being in the gray and blah, blah, blah. And I was thinking to myself, like, yeah, well, when we get to red, you'll have a job and I'll still be a stay at home dad. So, you
yeah.
know, that's, and not that there's anything wrong with being a stay at home dad. It's just like, you know, my identity, my whole personal identity is so wrapped around being a musician and going out and playing and singing for people that, you know, I can't wait to get back to it, you know, regardless of the time. It's been wonderful having time with the family and reconnecting mm-hmm. with them and with my wife and spending that time. But, you know, I did roll my eyes a little bit as my friend was complaining to me that, you know, she couldn't get back to work. It's like, well, listen, I'm going to be the last one back to work. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. you know, Think about me next time you're booking your clients in to come to work, you know.
So. You know what? Everybody's got to be so grateful for what they have in the moment, because like
exactly.
you know things change so quickly. Now I got to give a shout out to Amanda and, you know, mm-hmm. all the frontline workers. Like, she's a nurse and, you know, we
yep.
thank her so much, you know, for everything that she's doing out there. God bless her.
Yeah, I thank her all the time. It's one of those things, like, she, you know, she's a public health nurse, so she's literally fighting a war right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, to keep our community safe and to, you know, to get the word out about what to do and what not to do. And, you know, it's been painful for me to watch how slow the vaccines have been rolling out.
But terrible.
You know, when I talk to her about it, she really puts it in perspective. She's like, listen, like, this is a major operation.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, it's going to take time to vaccinate, you know, 40 million people. It's mm-hmm. just going to take time, and you got to be patient, and we're all doing the best that we can. And shout out to all the nurses out there, because they are burnt out. Like, they have been working, and like, it's been my experience that nurses are a really special kind of person in that they never complain
mm-hmm.
and they take on, somehow they absorb the problems of the world and carry them on their shoulders. So, you know, they're not only just carrying their own weight, they're carrying everyone's weight, every mm-hmm. patient they've ever had, every family member that's looked them in the eye, every you know, every person on a ventilator that they've had to care, you know, they're carrying that weight. And so they're really special people, and kudos to them, because we couldn't have gotten through this. And we won't get through it without them, that's for sure.
Exactly. And I think that people forget too, like when I did a lot of work in the hospitals, and the same thing I still do. That's a big part of my career and mm-hmm. what I do in the community. And, you know, I used to see so many families that, you know, would never come and visit a loved one.
Right.
And
right.
I would never leave a patient. I would stay with that patient. I would not let them go on
yeah.
their own. I just didn't want anyone to be alone. And I feel exactly what the nurses feel. I don't think people realize how much they do, because when there isn't family members there, they are the family member.
Yeah.
And they care from their heart. And that takes an awful lot when you're seeing so many patients on a floor, you know, with one nurse. And, you know, yeah. with public nurses, completely different. They are holding the glue together for that whole entire community. And
yeah,
it's
absolutely.
A machine that runs that, a team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And we've got a real good bunch. I have a lot of faith in our leadership down here in Niagara. So it's, you know, although there's been some frustration and, but I think that's natural when you've taken everyone's ability to socialize and to work and to feel like a human away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, we're such social animals, you know what I mean? You need people. And that's one thing. My wife is, she's so social, and I've seen the effect of the pandemic on her in that regard,
yeah.
because, you know, not being able to go and spend time with her friends or see family has been really difficult on her. I'm a little bit more of a hermit,
mm-hmm.
so I don't mind. And my brother's hilarious. So he's even more of a hermit than I am. So I asked him, he came down to we've got a beach nearby. He was doing some metal detecting. I said, so how you making out? How you doing? He goes, oh, nothing's changed for me. I don't really like seeing anyone anyway. I thought, how lucky for you, you know? And I got a bit of that, but I still, you know, I miss the hang. Like I definitely, we love to host at our place. We've got a fairly large backyard, and we can have fires, and we love to light up, you know, a fire and sing some songs, and not being able to do that with our friends has been pretty painful.
Oh, has the kids picked up any instruments? Are they playing?
Yeah. Surprisingly, they're quite musical. So just before lockdown, they had started piano lessons, and
oh, wow.
So we found a piano teacher. She's wonderful. She comes to our home and teaches them right here for about a half an hour. Of course, we haven't had that while we've been in lockdown, but as we're coming into red this week, we'll start piano lessons again, and they're really enjoying it. They spend a lot of time too, especially lately. Like I've been doing a lot of writes
mm-hmm.
over Zoom, and they come and just kind of hang out in the studio while I'm writing. And I can see the wheels turning, you know,
nice.
and when I look behind. So, you know, they're getting a firsthand education on how music is built and how to write it, but also, you know, how to play it. And someone said to me, like, well, I mean, shouldn't you be teaching them piano? I said, no, that's like your dad teaching you how to drive a car. You know, it's not a good idea. You need someone that's objective and you know, is not emotionally attached to the vehicle or the person driving it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Keep your hands and feet inside the vehicle at all times.
Exactly. It's better for them if they do it. But my son in particular, they're both musical. My daughter and my son, but in different ways. So for instance, my son is a real reader. Like he reads music like Amanda does. Amanda plays piano as well. And like she can read sheet music. And I took lessons for years and years, but I never, once you start playing in bands, you don't, sheet music goes out the window. Cause not most guys that I play with don't know how to read.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't really need it, but my son can sit down and read notes on a page, and then I'll hear him. He'll take a song that's in say like 4/4 and he'll change it to 3/4.
Oh, really?
And he'll play it in a different, and then he'll change the key and he'll play whatever song he just learned in a different key, in a different feel. And that to me, like,
that's awesome.
It stopped me in my tracks, because that's something like, that's a really valuable skill set as a musician to be
mm-hmm.
able to be versatile like that and to hear that in your brain, in your mind, you know.
Wow.
And my daughter's a little bit more tactile. Like she'll sit down and kind of like figure out a song and sing it.
Mm-hmm.
She's the singer of the two. So she, you know, she's much more vocally oriented. But it's really neat to kind of watch them And then, you know, of course, somebody says, well, do you hope they follow in your footsteps? I'm like, God, no. Anything. Anything but that. It's just so heartbreaking to be a professional musician. Like, just don't do it. Do anything. Like, do music for fun. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I had to, you know, when it's your job, it's like, I've had to rediscover the fun of playing music because, you know, I'd get home from the road and put my guitar on the corner and not touch it until I left for the road again, you know what I mean? So it's like that love of playing every day and singing, and I've had to rediscover over the course of the pandemic, and maybe that was one of the reasons why, you know, why personally why it was brought into my life, you know, is to reconnect with my family and to rediscover my love of music.
Well, it's your opportunity too to be able to be there for Amanda, you know, in a way that she was there for you, you know, with the whole career, right?
Absolutely.
But at the same time, it gives you that downtime to be able to actually be in your own thoughts, because so many people, we were talking about this on the show so often, you know, when it comes to being able to see things that you need to work on, you know, in yourself, because when the noise is there, and God knows with you, you're so busy, and you know, as soon as you're writing, then you're in the studio, then you're right on the radio, then you're right on a tour, there's just no time.
Yeah.
And you know, some things that, you know, you might not handle so well in life, you just keep putting in the back corner in ourselves, and it builds up later on, right?
Absolutely. That you've described it perfectly, you know. It's being self-employed, I think that a lot of people that are entrepreneurs can relate to this, is that there's no clocking out. Especially when, if it's a small business and like you're the guy or you're the girl, like if there's no one else that's going to handle that email, there's no one else that's going to make that phone call, there's no one else that's going to find your next paycheck or, you know, follow through on the last one or like whatever it is, then you find yourself always thinking about it. At least I do, because I'm a bit of a worrier, like,
I hear
especially when it comes to, you know, as a, you know, being a dad and being a provider and those things. And, you know, I could easily be accused of being selfish, you know, just because, like, especially when you're an artist, like, you know, it's my name that's up on the 30-foot backdrop behind me. So everything revolves around me and my schedule and when I, you know, songs I write and my voice that I'm singing in and, you know, my abilities. And so when you're forced to slow down and you take all that away, it really does force you into a corner to deal with all those things that you didn't necessarily want to deal with for all those years, you know, and that can be a very positive thing. It could also be a very negative thing if you let it. But for me, you know, I just it forced me to really look inward and, for instance, learn how my household is run. You know what I mean? Like, I sort of took for granted that Amanda, it's like, 'cause she's so organized, right? She would just plan all the meals. I just took. Never even thought about anything else. Like, just knew that, okay, well, what's for dinner? You know what I mean? And when she is working, you know, 16-hour days and she's exhausted and I'm the stay-at-home parent, she's like, listen, you're going to have to come up with a meal plan. And there's no safety net there. You're just in it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm glad. Like, in retrospect, I'm so glad that this has happened, because it's allowed me to really step my game up, you know, in terms of, like, being a partner and being a dad and being a husband, and not those things don't always stack up to, you know, what you're providing financially. You know, there are other aspects to being a dad and being a husband that are more important than, you know, the paycheck every 2 weeks, you know. But as men, I think especially, we think of ourselves as like, I have to provide, like, that's my job, is I have to provide, and if I don't provide, I'm a failure. And that's not the case. You know, here I am, like, I haven't worked in a year, but I've provided like a lot more than I usually have to my wife and to my kids. So that, for that, I'm thankful for.
I hear you, because I know, you know, with everything that you just said there, you know, I could just echo so much of that, because for me, you know, a lot of people don't realize what it takes to run a magazine. And you know, what it takes to run the podcast, to produce it and everything else.
Yes.
And you know, it's nonstop making sure the interviews are in there, and you know, it's just like so much goes into the magazine. And it's a full-time job. And when you've got so much of that, and especially when COVID hit, we don't have the same people on staff that we used to have.
Right.
And, you know, so much has changed. And then, you know, you're at home, you're running the house at the same time, you know, and trying to get all this stuff done, because we look after my mom full time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And like, she's at end of life. So, you know, everything's revolved around that. And, you know, John, same thing at home. He's recording and, you know, doing his show live. And then he does an awful lot when it comes to working in the podcast now. But we've all had a real appreciation to what it takes. But when it comes to the household food thing, we hear that every night. Who's pulled out what for dinner? John's going,
Yeah. Well, that just something, it sounds silly, but it's like, actually, you just reminded me, I got to take a steak out of the fridge.
There you go.
But it's, and I'm serious. But it's those types of things that are like so important. You know what I mean?
Creates especially chaos where, if it's not out. I'm telling
you. Yeah, and like I was like the kind of guy that I would go because when I was home from the road and Amanda was working in the office and the kids were at school, I'd take the kids to school or she would, and I would go to the gym. And after the gym, I'd go and hit the grocery store and get what we needed for that night or for the next couple of days. Well, when you're in a pandemic and they're telling you to stay home, you can't operate like that. You can't go and get a couple of things at the grocery store. So it's like having to be organized with, okay, what's coming up? What's coming up tomorrow? What do I need to have ready to go? And like, it's like so many times she'd be like, did you take out the chicken? It's like, no, I didn't.
Say it every night.
Yeah. And they're, oh my God. Yeah. That's actually, I have more bad dreams about that now. About like, you know, the naked performance dream that all performers have, you know.
I'm sure John has those every day.
Yeah.
Because it's so the same thing. It'll be like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm working away and I'll go, what are we, did you pull something out for dinner? Because, you know, I'll do a lot of cooking up ahead of time, but he's become a really good cook. Mm-hmm. You know, during this pandemic, he's really good now. And it's it just helps out so much. And then he'll help feed my mom while I'm still working. You know, we kind of switch off. So, you know, he's become a really big help. But I remember in the beginning, he was like, oh my God, I can't do this. I gotta do dinner.
I'm that kind of cook too. Like I get overwhelmed quickly. Like I'm the kind of guy. So this is the perfect example. It's like in the difference between my wife and I and why we compliment each other is, you know, the day after a party, right? When you're looking at the kitchen, it's a disaster everywhere. I am paralyzed. I don't know where to start. I don't know what to do. And she has this amazing ability. She can look at the room and know exactly what to do. And it's clean. Like if she was on this call, she would tell you that she likes cleaning up after a party because that part of her brain, she likes to engage the organization part of it. Mm-hmm. And I've had to learn like a little bit of that. And so for instance, like, you know, what was I cooking the other night? And I was getting, I forgot to put something in or I forgot to take something out. And because when you time it out perfect, like she can time out a meal where it all comes out at the same time and it's wonderfully hot and everything's happening all at the end. And like, I've got one thing that's been done for 15 minutes and another thing that's going to be done in 10. And the kids are going like, you know what? I thought you guys told us to wash our hands. What's happening? I'm like, don't worry. The garlic bread will be ready in 5 minutes. I swear. Like, Let's just start. You know, it's like so stressful for me. You know,
I can so relate to that.
I know, right? Oh my God. So I'm learning how to do that. And I wouldn't say that I'm a good cook by any means. I'd say that like I'm like a 6 out of 10 stereotype like dad cook. Like I can cook the things that my kids like, and I got a few tricks, but that I don't have very many tricks. But I sing real pretty.
The good, yes, the bad, and the pretty. Yeah.
I've learned too, when I go grocery shopping now, to pick up some things just in case I forgot to pull something out of the freezer.
That's a great idea.
Okay, we've got that. There we go. You know, there's a shepherd's pie that I can throw in the oven very quickly. You know, I've learned to do
or
that.
Or so. Cereal.
No, he hasn't gone that bad.
We have no kids in the house, so
yeah.
He still has a hard time looking at eggs for dinner if we need to.
Yeah. Hey, you got to do it every now and again.
That's not normal.
Yeah.
Your pants aren't normal.
His blackened is still his favorite flavor.
Nice.
Burnt is a flavor.
It's a flavor.
It is.
It's called John's Flavor. It's yes. really good.
The smoke yep. detector is my timer.
I know.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, it's ready. Yeah.
Ready. Hang on a second. Let me open up the windows. Oh, it might be a little bit hard. Wait, it was good a second ago.
Yeah.
All right. Now, you are rolling out some new music. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm in the throes of writing right now. I'm writing a ton of tunes. And so, you know, I mean, I'm going to have a record ready to go, or at least an EP sometime within the year. And I'm hoping by the end of the summer. But we've also got a few tricks up our sleeves. When we started doing this thing on Rec, with the Rec EP and then Rec This, and I was slated to do, you know, Rec and then Rec This, and then the third installment of, the, you know, three songs, instead of like committing to 12 songs and touring those for 2 years, you know, but you know, the pandemic kind of wrecked those plans. Pardon the pun, but in the meantime, you know, we just thought, like, I really like that kind of way of operating, because as I'm writing, like, creativity is such a fluid thing. It's like, if I wrote something today that is really great, we could, you know, rush a mix on it and put it out. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So we've got a few tricks up our sleeves, and I think you'll be hearing new music from me way sooner than the end of the summer. So
nice.
Yeah. So there's a couple things in the works.
Cannot wait. You promise you're going to come back and come on the show and talk about what you're releasing. So we're going to really look forward to that. Can you do the question answer period right now before you go?
Sure. Yeah.
All right. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay. What is your favorite thing to do in your downtime?
My favorite thing to do is, well, lately I'd say renovate my kitchen. But I've really gotten into that. So we're doing a major home renovation that COVID kind of pushed a year. So we'll start that probably at the end of the summer with a contractor. But in the meantime, my father-in-law is super handy. So the two of us have been renovating our laundry room and kitchen. So that's what I've been, I've really been into that. It's kind of a Zen thing for me. Like, cause I'm just a follower in that moment. I wait for him to tell me, like, put a screw there. No, not there. A little bit over, you know, cause he has the vision and he has the know-how. And so I'm just learning, and I've really enjoyed that. So
you're the apprentice.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go. All right. Most ever played song on your playlist?
Oh, anything by the Rolling Stones. And the only reason I know that is because every year when Spotify gives you your top 10 artists played or whatever, the Stones are somehow the number one every year. I don't even know. I never even knew I was that big of a fan. But I guess, you know, like when I'm just hanging out or when we're having a, you know, playing cards or whatever, I'll throw on, like, you know, I love early 70s Stones, like Exile on Main Street and Sticky Fingers and Goat's Head Soup, like all those records. So I guess there you go. So
awesome.
Yeah.
If you could, I'm just putting a different twist to this because I know everybody asks, you know, is there an artist that you'd love to have met, you know, past or present? Yeah. I want to ask you if you could step into the shoes of an artist, past or present, who would it be and why?
Wow, that's a great question. If I could step into the shoes, I think, oh man, that's, I mean, I was such a huge Beatles fan. I know it's like kind of cliche to say, but it's like, you know, I literally stepped into the shoes of John Lennon while I was playing in the Beatle band.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So like we dressed up and we did the whole nine and I was John in the band. So I found that really interesting. So I would say John Lennon. I would just, you know, I think it would be neat to see the progression of that whole situation from the first hand. You know,
he was a genius, you know, producing and writing.
Yeah, what a stroke of luck to have McCartney and Lennon and George Harrison in the same band. And Ringo too, but you know, I think Ringo would probably say, "I'm just happy to be here." You know,
it's just the drummer.
Well, I would say just the drummer, but because didn't that get them in trouble? John was like, "He's not even the best drummer in the Beatles." That's
right. I forgot about that. That's
got him in trouble. Yeah. And I think that's why I would say, like, that's another reason why I think I'd pick John Lennon, is like sometimes his mouth got him in trouble, and I can fully relate to that.
No, yeah. Not you.
Oh, God, yeah.
Come on. Do you remember when I interviewed you the first time? That's when you were coming out of the trailer. Do you remember me stumping you? Because you just went pale when I said to you, are you ever going to do a duet? Are you ever going to do a ballad? Remember?
Oh, ballad. Yeah, I think I do have a vague recollection of that. Yeah, because, you know, in those days especially, all of a sudden I was around people that were saying things like brand and brand consistency. And yes, of course, like, you know, for me, I mean, all those years playing in bars, like, you want to play all kinds of different songs because you need all kinds of different songs to make your show interesting. So, you know, when I finally got to, you know, for, like, I know it's late and there are other ballads that I've sung, but so for instance, Ride or Die on the last EP, that song is like, I could not wait to sing that song in front of an audience because it kind of gives me my like Bon Jovi, Better Roses moment. You know,
there
what
you
mean?
Go.
And yeah, I mean, you know, it was just a matter of trying to find one that didn't make me feel weird about singing it. Cause you know, man and I have been together a long time and I like to sing songs that are true. Mm-hmm. And so singing like an outside song about like new love or young love or a breakup song can sometimes be difficult for me because it's hard to relate, you know?
That's what you said to me. That's what you said to me that day. I was like, no.
You will sing a ballad. It sings a ballad.
You remember.
Yeah. As you sort of get more and more comfortable in your own shoes as an artist, like it's easier and easier to sing more songs like that. So
yeah. And you've done a few since then. So yeah, it's been pretty awesome to hear.
Yeah. And I've got one up my sleeve right now that's like tailor made for a duet. So hopefully that one sees the light of day and we're able to find someone to sing it in. And I can convince my record company to give me a budget to cut it.
Oh, that would be awesome. You know what? That help always happens. But you know what? They'll do it for you. You can talk them into it.
Yeah, usually if I kick and scream enough, they'll be like, okay, look at him. He's crying. Just give him the money.
It's emotional. He does not get emotional.
Yeah.
Okay. What is the most useless talent you have?
The most useless talent that I have. I was about to say, my instinct was to say my ability to fold a t-shirt, but that actually does come in pretty useful. Amanda worked at the Gap. One of the things when we first moved in together, she's like, sit down. I need to teach you how to fold one. So I've gotten pretty good at it. I'm not as good as her. She can fold it. It looks like it's in the store. But I'm a close second. So I guess if you were lining it up in terms of life skills, it'd be useful. But if it was in terms of being a musician, folding a t-shirt is probably my most useless talent.
What would she say if you just rolled it up?
We wouldn't have gotten married. It wouldn't have happened.
I got a son that's in the army, and it's so funny because, you know, he was just such a mess when I come to his room. And now he'll come in and he's, oh, God, are you kidding me? He'll be looking in the cupboards or anything else because I was a neat freak. And every Friday I did my cleaning and it just used to drive him crazy. And now, you know, everything is in its perfect place in his house. Yes. And in his car, God help you if you touched his window, even stuck a finger near his door. Like he'd be hollering at you in 2 seconds. But he rolls everything up. So they fold everything great, but then they roll it up. And trust me, you can get so much more in your drawers.
Oh, yeah.
It's awesome. Yeah. Awesome.
We use the I think it's called the Campari method.
Oh,
where
yes.
You fold your t-shirts, but you stack them vertically so you can see them all in your drawer.
Yep.
And that, I mean, it works great for us. The kids' drawers are still a disaster, but that's to be expected, you know. And it's one of those things that happens over time because I'm the same way. Like I love to have a clean truck, which seems weird. It's like, well, it's a truck, but I like to keep my nice things nice, you know, but being a dad beats that out of you because they're, you know, like there's yogurt on the seat back there and like goldfish on the floor. And you know, you can only clean it so much before you just like,
goldfish on the floor.
Oh, you mean the crackers?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
The crackers.
There are goldfish on the floors? Wait.
Yeah, my son wants to be a biologist. We've got goldfish on the floor.
Okay. Do you ever sing in the shower? And if you do, what song do you sing?
Yeah, I mean, I don't belt it in the shower. I'm always kind of humming a tune or singing, and usually it's like lately I've been singing The Good, the Bad, and the Pretty, just because it's on my mind. So it's like kind of whatever's on my mind. Or if we write a song, like for instance, I wrote a great one last night with Jeff Copeland and Bruce Wallace again. So I woke up singing it, you know, and I had to play Amanda the work tape. I was like, you got to check this out. It's hilarious.
What does she do when you guys get in the car? Does anybody, you know, like when your song comes on the radio, what happens?
Oh, usually she turns it.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh,
oh yeah. She's like, enough of that already.
Where's that support? Come on.
Well, it's there. It's there, but it's in a different way. Like, she hears the songs the day they're written. She hears the work tapes. Then she hears the demos. Then she hears the masters. Then she hears the mastered masters. So by the time it gets on the radio, we've heard it so often. But, you know, if it's like, if the kids are excited about it and the kids are in the truck, then we'll let her go.
Does she have a favorite artist right now, Amanda?
Yeah, she's actually switched over right now. So she listens to a lot of like Indie 88 is on in her car.
Oh, okay.
So I'm not sure. Like, she loves the Beaches.
Mm.
So I would say like bands. She's really into kind of girl bands right now. So
okay.
That's one of her groups that, you know, like she's really missing going to see live.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah.
There's just so many of them out there right now. Like Canada. You know, when it comes to all genres right now, like, but especially country, holy cow, have we ever put ourselves on the map? You guys have done an amazing job.
Yeah, it's a great scene up here. And, you know, I'm proud to be a part of it. And I just hope that we can keep the train rolling and that people are still interested.
Now, what is your favorite album of all time?
Well, having just said Rolling Stones, I would probably say Exile on Main Street is my favorite album of all time.
Okay.
But that's it's kind of hard to say, because, like, for instance, I really love Zeppelin 3, you know.
Okay.
And I love Lost Together by Blue Rodeo. I think that's a brilliant album. I love you know, like Pink Floyd, any, like, you know, I introduced my kids to Dark Side of the Moon, and now JJ will put it on. And Full Moon Fever,
that's
a great record, you know. So, and it's hard to, like, in this day and age, like, when people don't, you know, you don't listen to albums front to back anymore, you know, it's all about songs and playlists and streaming. And that to me is an art form. I think it'll come back around, but, like, you know, and I've started collecting vinyl. I started a few years back and got a record player. I was inspired actually by my steel guitar player, Chris Altman. He's heavy into vinyl, and him and his wife collect. And every time we were at their house, they put on a record, and I just thought, that is so cool. And so I had to get one myself, and I've started to collect. And so now, for instance, like another great one I just listened to the other day was Madman Across the Water, the Elton John album with Tiny Dancer and Leave On and all those songs.
Never gets old, does it?
Yeah, and this, it's hard for me to narrow it down to one. But what I will say is, on all those records, there are songs that are country songs, and these classic rock guys, you know, especially the early 70s, for some reason, they were able to get away with things that you couldn't necessarily get away with in this day and age. And I'm envious, but I'm also thankful and at the same time, because we get these wonderful pieces of art, you know, to enjoy.
Mm-hmm. And I think everybody forgets all the songs. Like, once you do get an album in front of you, you forget. Mm. Like, you go to play it, and it's just, I forgot that song was on there. I love that song. And you start playing them again, you know. And I know my son, I listen to classic rock. Like, I used to take 2 weeks off, and I would go to a cottage, take the kids to a different cottage, and my nephew and my son. And we would just play classic rock the whole way. Now, that's all they play.
Yeah.
And it's kind of cool to see that, you know, going to a different generation, right?
Absolutely.
So
Absolutely.
Name, here's a good one. I want to see what you say to this one. Name a song that gets you emotional.
One came on the other day and it welled me up. And why am I, I'm drawing a blank here. Not Waylon Jennings. It was... he passed away. He was on Letterman. Keep Me in Your Heart for a While is a song. I'm Googling it. Oh, it's Warren Zevon.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Warren Zevon. I don't know why I couldn't think. It's called Keep Me in Your Heart for a While. And the reason it did, I caught the interview with him on David Letterman. He had been diagnosed with like stage 4 cancer of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
And they knew it was going to be his last interview that he did.
Mm.
And it was profoundly emotional. And because I guess Letterman and him were good friends.
Mm-hmm. Very much
and,
so.
Yeah. And so they did this interview that was extraordinary. And then he sang that song live and you could hear the warble in his voice. Mm. And so it came on. Spotify will do weird things. It just came on at the right time and it just welled me up as I was doing the dishes. I was just like, oh, my God, this is so good.
Nice.
So I would say that Keep Me in Your Heart for a While by Warren Zevon.
Very nice. Biggest pet peeve.
how personal do you want to get here?
Very. Come on. Yeah. It's a podcast.
Biggest
Give it.
Pet peeve. I would say, you know, people that heckle dance when they play.
Very
that,
cool.
This just drives me crazy. Like, do I come down to Bix Pickle and yell at you while you're working on the line?
Bix Pickle.
You know, like, you know, like, I'm all for interaction, but when it gets aggressive like that, and like, you know, I've had the good fortune of being able to, like, learning how to handle those moments.
Yeah.
And, you know, so much so that there's been a few quiet rides home with the band, like not so much lately, but like when we were playing in bars, right? Because I would get really kind of like irritated by people if they were like, you know, yelling that you suck at the back of the room when you're trying to have a party and someone's going, you suck.
It's not
so
necessary.
I could shut these guys down. I could shut them down real good, but the odd time I would go too far. and the ride on the ride home be quiet and I'd be like a little too far guys or like a little too far, you know, if the crowd does this, like if someone heckles you and you say something back and the whole crowd goes ooh,
yeah,
that's a good indication that you were a little over the line.
Yeah, and then it gets them focusing on what the comment was, not you, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm glad you brought that up too, because I don't know if not too many people know this, my mom used to work at Bix.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. I used to call her my pickle packing mama.
That's amazing. Did she didn't happen to work to live in Dunville, did she?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. Okay. Now, let's see how deep you'll go on this one.
All right.
What
this
is...
This got to be the last one. I got to get... Yep. My rights at 10, so yep. I got to get going.
You got it. What is the most trouble you've ever been in?
Oh, wow. Okay. Like with my mom, like kind of thing?
Come on. Whatever.
Yeah. That's a good question. I mean, okay. There's one that, that still gives me anxiety to this day, in that I missed my bus at school one time and I felt really guilty about it for some reason. And so I walked home instead, which was fine, 'cause I knew the way and I would often walk home, but I was probably 7 and I was on my own. And I didn't tell anyone because I was embarrassed that I missed my bus, and my mom had a fit. Like I walked home and I remember being on the street that kind of our street connected with, and I don't think we had a car. Like I think my parents were still together, I think. So we only had the one car. My dad must've been working and my mom was driving with the neighbor. Like she went and got the neighbor and said, Tim didn't come home. He didn't get off the bus. We got to go find him. Like, it really put the fear of God in her that, you know, something had happened to me. And I remember just feeling awful about it and being in really big trouble that I had done that and not told anyone.
Bad.
Yeah.
All right.
So don't walk home with that when you miss your bus, kids.
That's right.
Go tell a teacher.
That's right. All right. Thank you so much for stopping by and sharing the very special song, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, and the story behind, The Good, the Bad, and the Pretty.
See? It would have made a good song.
I told you. Holy cow. All right.
Derek Rattan.
Oh. I want to put the intro of The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly in under that for you.
Right?
Love
it.
We cannot wait to hear, you know, the new music that's going to be coming out later this year. So please come back, stop by, and we just love talking to you. And
will do.
Good luck out there. Stay safe. Make memories.
Will do. Thanks, guys. Appreciate the time.
Thanks,
all right,
Tim.
Take care. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you to Tim Hicks for coming by Music's Journey. What a great honor it is to have him here. as I said before, being with him from the beginning of his career through those 18 years and then seeing him hit and seeing how far he's come. And what a story behind that man. Incredible country rock artist, and we love that rock side of Tim. So thanks so much for coming by and sharing the good, the bad, and the pretty, the brand new single that he has out right now. And it is just the beginning for what he's got coming out this year. So we look forward to having him back to discuss all that for his new EP he's got coming out. So stay tuned for that. We've got some great shows coming up tomorrow. We've got a very special guest that's going to be on with us, pop singer Caitlin Bean. She's going to be in. And we have also rock band Taming Sari is going to be here. We also have Diane Chase is going to be in. We've got quite a few coming up next week, so we're really looking forward to it. We're just giving you so much this week just because we got so many new releases. So we look forward to you coming back and tuning in for the rest of the shows this week. We have Lemon Cash and Kate Gillespie is coming back. I want to especially thank all of our global listeners out there. We were looking through it last night, once again, just amazed at the listeners that we have. Just an incredible, incredible amount of people that have tuned in. And we are so appreciative. Thank you so much for listening to us. And we hope that you'll stick with us. And we got some great bands, interviews coming up, some really neat stuff along the way. And we got a kind of mini documentary that we're going to be doing with Lighthouse and quite a few of the classic rock bands. So we're looking forward to doing that in the next few weeks as well. So stick with us and thank you again so much. Make memories and we'll see you soon. I'm Kim Sear on Music's Journey.
Once again, a great big thank you to Tim Hicks for chatting with us today. Born and bred in St. Catharines, Ontario. The new single is The Good, the Bad, and the Pretty. The Music's Journey podcast is brought to you by NowAndThenMagazine.com. You can listen to all our podcasts on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, TuneIn and Alexa, Podcast Addicts, Deezer, Player FM, Podchaser, Pocket Cast, and more. Our theme song is titled I Can Tell and is performed by the band Emergence. I'm John Marshall. On behalf of Kim Sear, thank you for listening to Music's Journey.